Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
Today we'll address the District of Columbia's 2012 proposed budget with AFGE 14th District National Vice President Dwight Bowman and online degree opportunities with Grantham University's President Dr. Frederick Snow. But first, AFGE National President John Gage will discuss the impact of a government shutdown on federal employees and the services they provide.
I want to talk a little bit about the shutdown in general. I mean, obviously, maybe not obviously, but it certainly is a hoax. It has nothing to do with its deficit. It is more of a ideological victory game. Now, even though a lot of people can get hurt, and this idea of shut it down seems to be some people are banging their chest that we ought to shut it down. The targets of this shutdown and the targets of the now the $33 billion versus $66 billion argument that is going on. The thing that makes it such a hoax is that regardless of the deficit, the agencies that are being targeted for these cuts are agencies that a certain partisan group never liked to begin with. You know, Social Security would probably get hit with a $1.7 billion cut. There'll be field office closing. EPA, in the news we've been hearing about Planned Parenthood and National NPR, but the cuts to EPA are really interesting. 33% of their budget, this budget, 2011 budget, is being taken away. Now, that will really hit inspections. It will really hit water, air, Department of Labor also being hit in their inspections for mines and workplace interest. So when you look at where these cuts are, you can see that it's not a deficit issue. It is about going after programs that a certain group never liked to begin with and are using this bum's rush to cure the deficit as a way to attack these programs. Now, from a union point of view, and from talking with federal employees, you know, across the country in the last several weeks, a lot of us are rank and file employees are really scratching their head that we were never the cause of this deficit, yet we are being made out to be the cure of this deficit. And that's applying to working people really across the country. AFG is very involved in what's happening to public employees in Wisconsin and in Ohio, and it's all the same argument. Even worse, when to say that we're going to cure the deficit by taking away employee rights, by taking away union rights, by even stopping dues checkoff, which is an absolute killer to any organization. This shows that it is not about reducing deficits. It's about settling old scores. And we really have a problem with that, working people across the country. Yesterday, there were thousands of demonstrations across the country sponsored by unions all over, and union people showing up and seeing this for exactly what it is. Now, a lot don't understand, too, that, you know, in 2000 we had surpluses as far as the eye could see. There was 9/11, the President Bush tax cuts, Katrina, two wars, the financial meltdown, TARP, bailouts, and suddenly we have deficits. Well, of course we have deficits. We went into those deficits, I believe, in a very conscious way. They were national emergencies. But now to come up and say under this 2011 budget, and I'm sure the 2012 budget, which the House budget chair is going to reduce this morning, we are going to see that deficit put on the backs of working people. Now, this is when you go after retirement, health care, pay freeze, and you do it with this thing that why should federal employees or public employees have a pension? Why should they have health insurance? I don't have it. Now, that cannibalism cannot exist among workers, and we are talking to our people. You know, for instance, don't say, well, why do contractors make more than federal employees? This is about 8 million jobs that we've lost. This is about 50,000 factories that shut down. And now to say that we are going to pay for this through programs, first of all, that benefit working people, Social Security, Medicare, you know, EPA, education, and we are also going to hit them on their retirement, their health care, and pay freeze. This can't stand. And at the same time, corporate profits through the roof. At the same time, the very people who caused this are again receiving outrageous bonuses. So this is a time for labor to stand up, and certainly federal employees, we are proudly part of the AFL-CIO, and we are standing up also to do our part. Now, what are we going to do? Well, aside from suing on the form of how this shutdown came about, we are out there actively energizing our membership. So far, we have over, I don't know how many petitions, probably 50,000 petitions we've delivered to Congress, hundreds of events around the country. For instance, our Social Security people last week did 70 events around the country, and tomorrow they're planning another 70 events around the country. We have taken out a radio ad which is playing in 100 markets currently, and they're playing in markets where there are federal employees, because our strategy is to activate our membership, to have them go to their congressman and tell them what they do, to tell them how important their work is to the American public, to tell the congressman what would happen if these services weren't given. And I think we're going to be very successful about it. If the shutdown goes through, we are having meetings this afternoon and conference call with all our locals and our elected officials. We are asking our people, if there is a shutdown, to stay tuned to the AFG website, but we will be calling our people back to work probably Tuesday or Wednesday. They can see them line up outside the building, but they will line up, and they don't let them into work. The American public at least can see that federal employees know the importance of their job and that political games should not be played with these services or with these jobs. So we fought very hard for many of these benefits. We fought very hard to protect these programs, and we are going to fight very hard to protect them. And this isn't, you know, some people say, well, share the sacrifice. I don't see this as a shared sacrifice type of issue. This is more spread the pain. Because someone in the private sector, you know, has lost a pension and doesn't have health care, this doesn't do that private sector worker any good to say, now we're going to strip public employees from a decent pension and decent health care. That connection is a non-connection. It is something that workers really have to understand. You know, it will not give a private sector person health care or a pension to cut a public employee's pension or health care. And that is something that we are going to be putting out, even though there is a side in this country who is trying very desperately to make that point and turn worker against worker. Finally, I want to talk about the TSA election. We have been working on behalf of transportation security officers for 9 years. When TSA was created, we fought very hard to make it federal. And we are glad that the administration is standing up strongly on keeping them federal. Just imagine how security would be if you had 100 contractors, maybe more than 100, running security at our airports. It just wouldn't work. We've also fought very hard for getting collective bargaining rights. It has taken us a while. Finally, Mr. Pistol, who got through the confirmation process with in the Senate, has, after much study, afforded collective bargaining rights for transportation security officers. And we are actively engaged in an election. The vote is going on now. It will go on through April 19th. And our union is very proud to have waged this fight, to have made the commitment to these workers, and to hopefully win this election and provide a very strong voice at work. One of the first things we're going to do is go after this PASS system, their pay evaluation. It is terrible. Those who were saying, oh, a pay-for-performance system, that's what we ought to do in the federal government. Well, I wish they would really work under this system for just a month and see how it works. You know, we've always maintained that pay-for-performance, when you're in a nonprofit area, there's not exactly profits to share among the workers, and we have no problem with that type of system. But here, there is no transparency in this. There is no credibility. The workers hate it to a person, and it is the first thing that AFG is going to go after. And hopefully Mr. Pistol, and I think he's heard enough from our workers too, that this is just a sham system that that really goes to lower and keep lowered the base pay of transportation security officers. If they were in GS as the rest of the government, if they were paid on a par with other law enforcement GS employees in the federal government, their base pay would be up $5,000 or $6,000. Now, this is not an area to nickel and dime the workers. And I think that we have done a lot with our union and to give them some hope to cut down the incredible turnover rate that they experienced the first 4, 5, 6 years. I think people are looking for hope that we are going to, they like the job, that they are looking for us to really provide a voice at work and to correct some obvious programs, and PASS is the biggest example that we have to correct. So our plate is full. I've been telling people, they say, how are you doing? I say, I'm not bored. And we've been working very hard in representing the people in all the agencies that AFG has. We have been representing them very strongly. I think they see it. They are joining our union, even though we are the true open shop. But people are joining the union because they see us as a voice and they see us as the most effective organization that represents the concerns of federal employees.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, President Gage will take questions from the press on the impact of a government shutdown.
Looking for a new computer, TV, or home appliance? Purchasing Power has a hassle-free way for you to buy these items through easy payroll deduction. You can get the new Dell Inspiron 15-inch laptop for just $30 bi-weekly. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com. AFGE members are eligible for a 10% members-only discount for a limited time. Sales tax may apply.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. After making an opening statement, AFGE National President John Gage took questions from the press. He had this to say about the information he's received from the White House regarding its plan to deal with a government shutdown.
Well, we haven't gotten any, Joe. You could see our letters out there, but we want to know the plan. If it happens on this day, who is going to be determined essential? How are people going to be let off? How are they going to be communicated with? There's all the details that any employee or any employer would want to know, if especially if his job was going to stop or his employment was going to stop on April 8th. So each agency, Joe, is a little bit different. Each agency is, by regulation, supposed to have a plan. And I don't see any reason why having a plan and not keeping your employees informed of the plan helps anyone. Now, if this is some mindset that, well, we don't want to panic employees, we're grown-ups, you know. We want to hear what is going to happen so that we can plan our lives and take care of or try to make the best of a bad situation. So that information, Joe, and sitting down with our counsels and VA and labor and Social Security and the Border Patrol and the prisons all across the line and sitting down and say exactly what this shutdown is going to mean and who and how extensive it's going to be. The administration really has a call on that. I think even the other side who may be pushing for a shutdown, they don't really want these services to stop. They want to put it out there that the government is shut down, but VA, you know, our veterans are still being treated in VA hospitals, that our borders are still being protected, and that, you know, Social Security checks are still going out. But that puts our employees at a real disadvantage. Services fall, we get criticized. You know, if a plan has confusion at the start or isn't done right, then this could be criticism coming back at federal employees. The only people in this whole unfortunate episode who should not be criticized here are the federal employees.
Gage went on to address why public employee unions haven't been given any information about how to handle a government shutdown.
No reason was given other than they don't think a shutdown is going to occur. And that was verbally about a month ago, and told that to all the union presidents, federal union presidents who were present for our labor management forum. And we went at it with formal letters from that. I mean, none of the presidents were accepting that. And why they're doing it, I really don't know. I think it's really bad business not to just call it for what it is and explain what could happen in a short shutdown, medium-sized shutdown, long shutdown, how extensive the shutdown will be. Now, I'll tell you about the size of the shutdown. Just one agency that I was very much involved with back in 95, the first week of the shutdown in Social Security, they closed all the field offices. So 50,000 employees were determined not essential. Then the second shutdown came along, and they determined that all the field employees were essential, that they wouldn't be taking new claims. They would be continuing the claims adjudications that had already been made. Now, I don't know how I think filing the lawsuit is going to help in a number of ways. First of all, I think everybody has to get a better idea of what a shutdown means, what the extent of it is, who is essential, who is not. We got to get some rules down here, and we have to really not be played in an ideological game that, well, we're shutting down the government. Oh, but we're really not, you know. So it's not that we're advocating that the government be shut down. However, I am even more strongly not advocating that the Obama administration goes along with these type of radical cuts to these programs. And if a shutdown is what has to happen, I think our employees are going to not like it, but they're going to understand it.
President Gage had this to say about step increases in the general schedule and how those increases are based on a federal employee's performance.
The thing about a step increase, and it's put out there, oh, these are automatic increases. These are based on performance, that in the first year of your employment, At the end of it, you get a step increase, and it goes that way for 3 years. Then it skips to 2 years, then to 3 years, up to a total of 10 steps. This is built in as a pay thing that rewards good performance. Now, people say, well, nobody gets fired or nobody has within grade increases withheld. Well, yes, they do. And people do get fired. But the big thing, too, that people have to realize is before you become a federal employee, a career conditional employee, you have to go through a 1 year, in most places, a 2 year probationary period where you can be let go for any reason. Of course, they can't discriminate against you, but you can be let go for any reason. And a good many of them are. So this thing about saying we're going at step increases because they're not based on merit, this is the essence of pay for performance, that you have to perform against these standards to warrant that within grade increase. And if you're not, if you don't, they withhold that with increase until your performance has come up to snuff. And that's the way it is.
Gage then used the National Security Personnel System as an example of a failed pay for performance compensation model.
Well, look what happened with NSPSD. They said nobody's being fired. So we're putting in the NSPS, National Security Personnel System, in DOD. And we're going to get all these slackers. And so it goes on 2-3 years. They fired less under the NSPS than they did before NSPS. So you might have to just recognize that federal employees do a pretty good job, that they are well-educated, they are seasoned employees, and saying that, well, we don't fire enough of them, I don't know what that is supposed to mean. It usually means it's a good workforce. The within-grade increase is not a forced distribution. The within-grade increase is something that is budgeted, that is appropriated. The money is there. In NSPS, the money is not appropriated. You have money for 10 people. Now, you have 15 people who are qualified. You still can only give it to 10. And that's why we objected so much to it. It's a forced distribution that I maintain is illegal. And that is why it was happening under NSPS. But I'll tell you one thing. We've gone, no federal employee wants to have someone working beside them who's not working. You know, our members get upset about that and think that something, you know, in those cases where it happens should be done. And in many cases, something is done. But we are willing to say on within grade increases, follow your regulations. You know, put up the standards. Management can name the standards. Management can say what performance is necessary for a within-grade increase. Now, if you're telling us not to represent people, well, that's not the way it works. We don't judge them. We represent them. Management judges them, all right? And I think that and we've offered some changes on within-grade increases to Mr. Barry at OPM to work it into his overall plan about performance management. But I tell you, so much money in the federal government has been spent on these HR idea of the month on performance management. I've been in this business for a long time, done a lot of contracts. They all are terrible. 3 or 4 years, throw them out, bring a new one, deflate everybody's rating, people work to get back up. And it's just really, well, federal employees are kind of used to it, and they know that I'm working hard. I'm never really going to get hurt by this thing. But this thing about trying to have 4 levels, 10 standards for each, critical and non-critical elements within each standard, supervisors don't even look at it. Employees don't even look at it. It's like an HR make-work game. And I'm saying that is really the way it is. We think there can be a much simpler performance management system. And we have offered it to Barry, and we're going to be offering it to DOD, which also has a group that is studying performance management. We think millions of dollars will be saved.
Lastly, Gage discussed AFGE members' concerns about the impact of a government shutdown.
Well, there's a lot of parts to that. If you're in Chicago and you're a nursing assistant making 28 grand, and you're going to have a shutdown, and you're going to miss a paycheck, that's number one, missing that paycheck. What do I do? We have many other federal workers who are, let's say, in that 54, 55 age limit, that are saying, what are they going to do to retirement? You know, should I go now? Don't want to go now. You know, doing a good job, but should I go now? Are they going to rip into retirement? Other people with health care, what do I have to go? How do I go to a higher premium plan? How will I afford it? Should I take an outside supplement? So there's all those economic issues. But the other thing, too, is you know, they're going to cut staff. Staffing cuts are part and parcel to these budget things. And a lot of our agencies are pretty strapped right now. Social Security, another good example, the field offices, they're taking in 600,000 more disability claims this year than last year. And it's because of the recession depression that we're in. Now, their staffing is already down. So how do you continue to give service that the American public expects, yet not have the bodies to be able to process the cases? And when someone's on disability and it's taken them 6-7 months to get a case processed, that can be a little irritating if you're a disabled person and out of work. So those are all the concerns that I'm hearing. We had a lot of SSA people, for instance, were at a rally the other day that Senator Reid had about Social Security. And what they're talking about are the staffing cuts, which will make the job impossible. It's hard now, but will make it impossible, and that the impact that will have on the future of Social Security and upon their livelihood.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, AFGE 14th District National Vice President Dwight Bowman will analyze D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray's 2012 proposed budget.
Attention AFGE members. AFGE has formed an exclusive partnership with Grantham University to offer you and your family members a special discounted tuition rate. With Grantham University's 100% online degree programs, it's even easier to earn a college degree while working full-time and meeting the needs of your family. Military and government training may be eligible for transfer credit. Find out more at grantham.edu/AFGE. That's grantham.edu/AFGE.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Dwight Bowman, AFGE 14th District National Vice President. NVP Bowman, D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray has submitted his 2012 budget proposal to the City Council. Tell us about the budget proposal.
Yes, good morning. How are you doing?
Great, thank you.
Well, the budget proposal thus far is quite extensive. We're studying it, and we're hopeful and we're very happy to know that nothing is off the table with the mayor. Our greatest concern was that, as in some other cities and across the country, the D.C. workers would bear the brunt of trying to fix the D.C. budget. But that is not happening. As we look at the budget, we're seeing that there are pretty much across the board cuts, and it is still going to be devastating, though.
Where does the plan call for the most significant cuts?
Well, I can't say that there's one place where there are the most significant cuts at this point in time. It appears that, as I indicated before, that they are pretty much across the board. They're also talking about the possibility of some taxes being levied. So in terms of our agencies, we're still studying that.
And how do you think that these cuts to the budget will impact public services?
Well, obviously, these public services are going to be cut back to some degree, and we are very concerned about that. When you look at the youth services and the detention facilities and the like, when you're cutting the budget, that means that you don't have as many people involved, and that means that some of these folks who are doing, shall we say, bad things, don't have the oversight that they should have.
And you also mentioned previously that the budget proposal would include possibly some tax increases or rate hikes.
Well, that's a possibility that is being discussed amongst members of the City Council and the mayor. There's nothing been firmed on that because obviously that's going to take a vote. But clearly what we are finding is that it's in the realm of a significant possibility at this point in time.
Let's talk about how the budget would impact the public school system. Do you see much of a difference there between last year's budget and the upcoming budget?
Not really. The concern is not so much the budget right now in terms of the school system, but in terms of how things are applied and the changes that are about to be made. You know, when we talk about the school system, this is not really our bailiwick, but we certainly, you know, have some opinions, and we do talk to our brothers and sisters who do represent the teachers, the faculty. And one of the great concerns there is what we see in terms of the overall process itself and the application. We would love to see more teachers. The teachers would love to see more teachers. We'd like to see more in the classrooms, but the budget is not significant enough to have any great changes.
The mayor has indicated in a number of reports that this is a tough budget. Would you agree with that assessment?
Oh, sure. When you see the kinds of demonstrated cutbacks, it's obvious that it's going to be painful. We see thousands and thousands of dollars that are not going to be going out as they did in the past. The question is, what are the alternatives? And in talking to the mayor and listening to the mayor and watching his efforts to bring more business into the city, his efforts to talk to the Indian business community and to see about bringing businesses in, suggests that he's on the right track. He understands that all of these budget cuts won't do the job by itself and that there have to be revenues raised.
And when will City Council begin to debate the budget?
To tell you the truth, they're already talking about it. They're talking about it with their constituents. They're talking about it, some of them, not all of them, unfortunately, but some of them are talking about it with my cohorts who are with the union movement. So when you see this devastating a situation in terms of the financial crisis, you recognize that even though the formal talks are one thing, the informal talks are already in process. We have a couple of my staff people who are looking at the budget in depth. This Friday we're going to be attending a function at the district building in order to hear what some of the thoughts are with regard to the budget. There will be discussions. I'm sure the audience is going to get a chance to have some input. So discussions are in process because this is such a monumental deal currently.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with AFGE 14th District National Vice President Dwight Bowman. MVP Bowman, when do you think district residents will be able to have a final budget in place?
I forget the exact date, but if I'm not mistaken, that'll be sometime in July. Now, you know, with this budget process, not only do we have to go through the District of Columbia in terms of the various steps that are taken, our budget also has to go on Capitol Hill, and it goes through a process on Capitol Hill where the Congress gets to weigh in. So even once the citizens get what is the D.C. portion of the decision as to what the budget should be, it's still got to be approved by the federal government in terms of the oversight committees.
So essentially there's a ways to go yet on this.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I believe the last time that we had you on the program, Vincent Gray was running for mayor. Now that he has achieved that, how would you grade his first term in office?
Well, this has been unusual because it's not been straightforward. Number one, we endorsed Chairman Gray to become the mayor. We were successful in our efforts in working with our brothers and sisters in the union movement. And as soon as he set up his transition team, he did put Josh Williams, who was the president of the Central Labor Council, on his transition team. Now, we haven't had as much contact as we expected to have and as we expect to have in the future. So I'm not prepared to give a real grade at this point. We're still expecting him to talk to us more in depth about what his plans are and to give us that opportunity. AFGE has put together a white paper, and we have presented it to the Central Labor Council and to some of the attorneys in the area, and we will soon be presenting that to Mr. Gray. Now, his response to that white paper and how we discuss what the unions are thinking and feeling at this point, particularly our union, are very important, and at that point we'll be able to give him a grade. And as I've said before, with any politician, it is not that we expect the individuals who hold office, that we help to get in office, to give us carte blanche or to do what we want them to do, so to speak, but to engage us and to give us that opportunity to help them, because it is our workers, the people that we represent, who provide the services to the city and to the residents of the city, to the guests of the city who come from other countries. So we understand how the process works. We understand what needs to be done, and we're just looking for an opportunity to provide some help to whoever is in office.
What are some of those key issues that you're looking after for the workers in the city?
In terms of the workers themselves, one of the most important things is to make sure that they are dealt with equitably. And I prefer to use that word than fairly, because each of us has a different idea as to what is fair. We want the workers to have an equitable situation within which to operate. We want the workers to have the opportunity to have input with regard to their jobs. We want, most importantly, that they are dealt with on a basis which is comparable to what all other segments of the society have. In other words, we have a business community. They get to have input. We want our folks to have input.
Under the previous administration, MVP Bowman, there was a strong anti-worker sentiment. Do you feel that that anti-worker sentiment is now gone under the Gray administration?
The sentiment from the administration itself, from the mayor, is gone. Unfortunately, the previous mayor looked at the union movement with disdain and looked at the employees as servants as opposed to service workers. The current mayor does give us the respect, understanding what the job is that needs to be done, and that's partly because he's been an administrator and a manager in D.C. government in the past. He has certainly shown me a great deal of respect, and what I'm looking for, in addition to the respect, is a greater opportunity for input, and I believe that that will be coming. One of the things that the mayor has indicated that he's going to do is to reestablish the labor management forums that existed, and we look forward to using those forums as an opportunity to ensure input on behalf of the workers.
You mentioned that you weren't able to have as much contact with the mayor as you previously had hoped. However, when you're traveling around the city and you're talking to city workers and residents, how have they responded to you, to the mayor's time in office so far?
They're sort of in a neutral position right now. What is important to them is knowing that things are going to change. They recognize that there has been a great upheaval since the mayor has come into office, that there have been a number of allegations, which has, to some extent, taken up the time of the administration and taken the focus of the administration off the normal business. I think the mayor has done fairly well, all things considered, and we look forward to these allegations being set aside and everyone having an opportunity to take a deep breath and get back to business.
AFGE 14th District National Vice President Dwight Bowman, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, and thank you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll hear from Grantham University President Dr. Frederick Snow.
The wrecking ball is hitting right now. Vital federal, state, and local services that working Americans depend upon every day are being smashed. As public employees, we know firsthand the damage these crushing attacks will have on so many Americans. Education cuts from Head Start through college loans. Less nursing care for veterans. Shutting down inspections for food, air, water, and coal mines. Closing Social Security offices. Less fire, police, prison, and border protection. And less support for our troops. Public employees need to set the record straight. No one is telling the real story, and no one knows it better than public employees. Call, then visit your congressmen and senators. Tell them who you are and what you do. Just tell them the truth. It's about time somebody did. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and we're joined by Dr. Fred Snow, president of Grantham University. Dr. Snow, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you very much.
Grantham is celebrating its 60th anniversary. So give us an overview about that.
Sure. Well, Grantham is one of the oldest distance education institutions in the United States, and we've been continuously accredited on a national scale for over 50 years. We have typically reached out to people who need a second chance. We really believe in the power of an individual, no matter where their starting point, to become successful and make a difference. And our university is really comprised of those who fought for the American dream, protected the dream, and achieved that dream. So we've been at this a long time, a lot longer than most of the more prominent online universities out there.
You mentioned seeking out individuals who are looking for a second chance. Explain that a little bit.
Sure. Well, you know, for most of us, not even some of us, but for most of us, education came a little later in life, or the need for education came a little later in life. Or the first time around, maybe we weren't quite so serious or quite as prepared. And that happens to a majority of the population in our country. So this is actually the majority, not the minority, of people who have this need. And as they come back to school, they suffer from great nervousness and anxiety about wanting to do well. All of a sudden, there's something on the line for them, their family, their careers. They're seeking that economic stability. They're seeking career advancement and so forth. And they have a very different kind of need and a very different kind of learning style. And so we specialize in meeting those needs and those learning styles of those folks who are coming back to school.
How does Grantham go about easing that anxiety and that nervousness for someone who may be jumping back into student life?
Sure. Well, Grantham specializes in two areas in this regard. Number one, in the way that our courses are constructed and the way that a student progresses through them. And the second one is in the tremendous support system that is built around the student. Every student has an individual mentor. And that mentor helps them with life decisions if need be, certainly with academic decisions, helps them if they're struggling in the classroom to find the appropriate level of attention that they need, proactively works with them when they're struggling in the classroom. And so it's, in many ways, we kind of swaddle our students. We stand all around them and help them and make sure that we're there when they need them, when they need us.
And talk a little bit about Grantham's commitment to diversity.
Sure. Well, Grantham has one of the highest diversity rates in the nation. We have 47% student diversity rate, and we're quite proud of that. That diversity rate also goes right into our place of employment. We have over 300 people in the Kansas City area, and our diversity rates are just as good there at our university.
Given the large number of continuing education courses and universities, whether in a specific location or online, what sets Grantham apart, and why should a student choose Grantham to further his or her education?
Sure. Well, Grantham University has always been devoted to the student, not necessarily devoted to making a profit. And so when we're very good, we're very creative, we are penny wise, we invest our resources wisely. So we have one of the lowest tuition rates in the nation for an organization of our caliber. And you can come in here and get an associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree for far below what the average is out there in the online market, far below.
And what are the benefits of online education these days?
Sure. Well, online education allows for the best of both worlds. And when I say the best of both worlds, the world of being synchronous and being asynchronous, being together and not being together. It's difficult for people stationed all over the world or all over the country, working different hours and having different lifestyles, to all get together at one point in time. Anybody who lives in a metro area struggles to get to class. In the online environment, you don't have to worry about those things. Your classroom comes to you at the point where you need it. At the same time, because technology is so robust these days, we have quite an interconnected community within that classroom. So while not everybody may be able to get together at one point in time, and rarely does that ever happen, an individual can get together with their professor or with a fellow student or with a small group of students anytime that they wish through the technology. So it really is the best of both worlds. What we do find is that in online learning, the participation of each individual member of the classroom is far higher than in face-to-face. In face-to-face learning, we often have several students who take over the conversation, or we listen to the professor talk on and on. And that just doesn't happen in online learning.
You mentioned Grantham's low tuition rate. How has that impacted your admissions and application rates given the struggling economy that we're facing now in America?
Well, I'll tell you that there are many online institutions who have taken a hit this last year. There's been a lot of looks at online education from the Department of Education and so forth, and many of our competitors are struggling with enrollments. We, on the other hand, our enrollments are just fine. We continue to grow at a very nice pace, a very manageable pace. So we feel that that is because in this environment, people are turning away from some of the other more expensive options and looking at ours and finding the quality indeed is there.
This is AFGE's Inside Government. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and I'm speaking with Grantham University President Dr. Frederick Snow. Dr. Snow, Grantham has a unique partnership with AFGE. What kinds of benefits do you have available to AFGE members?
Sure. Well, we have, in addition to our low tuition, we have an additional tuition discount down to $250 per credit hour for AFGE members and their immediate families. We have a textbook and software grant. You don't have to pay for textbooks at our university. We have also an annual scholarship. It's a full scholarship valued at $36,000 for the recipient to earn an undergraduate or a graduate degree at Grantham University. And it covers cost of tuition, textbooks, software, related fees. It includes a laptop that is provided by AFGE and Purchasing Power. And so we really, really feel strongly about the mission of AFGE and its members and their desire to get ahead. And so this is how we contribute to that.
If AFGE members or their families want to apply for the scholarship, take us through that process with deadlines and how to access the information.
Sure. Well, applications are actually now being accepted for the scholarship, and that deadline is May 31st. And you need to complete an online application, and you would simply visit afge.org and go to the member benefits section.
You mentioned with the benefit discount that it would be $250 per credit hour. Where does that rank Grantham in terms of cost related to competitors or other online universities?
Well, it puts us right at the bottom, quite frankly.
So it's a very, very good deal for AFGE members, their families, people who want to get involved and further their education then.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about the online degrees that you have available through Grantham.
Okay, we offer actually 38 degree programs. We have three different schools, the Mark Skousen School of Business, a College of Arts and Sciences, and a College of Engineering and Computer Science. And in the business program or business school, we obviously have a variety of business programs that most people have, are aware of and have heard of. In the College of Arts and Sciences, we actually at this point in time are separating out our nursing and health into its own school, our nursing and health sciences program into its own school. And it's it's quite a wonderful program. It's headed by Dr. Susan Fairchild, a noted textbook author and educator in nursing. We're quite proud of that. The College of Engineering and Computer Science, we have computer science and electronics, engineering technology, computer engineering technology, information systems. And we just have two new, brand new programs launched in February, a Bachelor of Business Administration in Human Resource Management and a Master of Science in Business Intelligence.
Describe those two degrees for a little bit and how they may fit into someone who would be looking for an opportunity in government or public service.
Oh, you bet. Well, human resource management has always been a big field in government. The AFGE, it's in and of itself, is hundreds of thousands of members, and the resource management of that, especially at the human resource management level within each and every one of those agencies, is very significant. So it's designed for students who are seeking a career in that field, and it covers topics like business management, business law, labor relations, employment law, training and development, personal management, etc. The MS in Business Intelligence is also just as significant today. We find that this is one of the hottest fields, and especially within union environments. And it's ideal for students seeking a career in management or those who are interested in becoming a business analyst. Now, the business analyst part of this in terms of business intelligence is very significant these days, and not only just in business analysts, but the skills also correlate very highly to government research and government analysis. So, the curriculum integrates technological concepts within a relevant application framework, and we're pretty happy with this program.
Dr. Snow, have you found that a number of Grantham graduates have moved on to public or federal service, even here in the D.C. area?
Oh, indeed. In fact, I would say primarily so. We serve a lot of government employees. We serve a lot of Department of Defense, active military, or retired military folks. And, of course, they center their activities around government activities and jobs. And so we have tens of thousands of them littered out there across the landscape of government, and especially in Washington, D.C.
And finally, Dr. Snow, what upcoming programs do you have that may be coming in the pipeline for Grantham?
Well, we're looking at a very significant expansion in our programs, not just in pure programs, but certainly in certificates that build around those programs. We're also looking at working with AFGE to essentially collect each and every training hour that has been done for the union member throughout their union membership and bringing that to bear upon transfer credits. And so that program in and of itself should help any AFGE veteran to further their education much more inexpensively and much more quickly.
If listeners want to learn more about Grantham, how can they find you?
It's very easy, www.grantham.edu.
Dr. Fred Snow, president of Grantham University. Dr. Snow, as always, thank you for your time today. Thank you to our guest this week, AFGE National President John Gage, 14th District National Vice President Dwight Bowman, and Grantham University President Dr. Frederick Snow. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife.